Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the 30th day of March 2021, and my name is Peter Wickham, in with Mr. John Stout. We take you up until 2 p.m., and we do hope that you are sufficiently settled, buckled in, and ready for what should be one of the hottest 2 hours that radio has seen in a long time. I've been away from you last week, looking forward to being with you for the next 4 Tuesdays at least, and we should have good opportunity to converse over that time. Remember, you can call on 434-1790. You can also use 266-IVOB. You can email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Those are the facilities, and I'd love to hear from you during the course of today's program. But of course, we start with my introductory remarks. Let me start by offering condolences to the family of the late Frank Blackman. Frank Blackman was known to us at Foundation as Blackie. He was our games teacher, and as one of the alumni, Alan Burke, said on his blog the other day, he was a coach, but in many ways, Blackie was also a life coach. The vast majority of people who came through Blackie's arms were like me, that were completely useless on the sports field. Nonetheless, Blackie also impacted on our lives, notwithstanding the fact that there was certainly no hope of us making it to the Olympics. Of course, there were Olympians. There were people like Alvin Haynes, people like Alan Ince. He had surfers like Alan Burke, who would have come through him as well. He would also have had the Gibbs brothers, who were swimmers back in the day. These are, of course, only 4 of them that I have mentioned. But the reality is that Foundation produced a whole lot of athletes under the mentorship of Mr. Frank Blackman. And then, of course, there was the other work that he did, where he left Foundation on afternoons and ventured down to Harrison College to train the likes of Obadiah Thompson. So Blackie was a simple man. He was a coach. He knew his craft. He taught us not only the rudiments of running, but certainly he was into cricket and all of the other sports. Blackie could do it. But I think the more important point was that Blackie understood that as games master at Foundation, while he needed to help those of us who were inclined in that way, he also had the time and the luxury of giving us life lessons. He was a life coach to so many of us, you know, in terms of the way that especially the boys who were a bit more rebellious needed to behave and that type of thing. And Blackie was a person who would give a guy a good talking to, and in many instances it worked. Lovely, lovely individual, there's no question about it. He is someone who sadly I drifted away from in later years. He would always ask for me. He attended James Street Church, or at least his wife attended James Street Church. He would always dutifully pick her up on Sundays. He would always ask my mother how I was doing and so on. And he looked out for us. Suleiman Babulia, my brother Suleiman Babulia, who attended Foundation in my year, he paid a lovely tribute. He saw him in hospital one day. He wasn't doing so well then, and he immediately remembered Suleiman, and they had a nice chat in ward at the QEH. So I'm happy to pay homage to Blackie on this occasion. A little known secret, we had a tragic incident at Foundation many years ago, and this will lead into my next set of comments, where a girl was killed. She was stabbed. There was a girl called Donna who was doing the stabbing. We can say this because she is she's now an adult. She killed a girl called June, and we knew both of them. But the more important point was that the last person that June spoke to was Blackie. Because when she came out of the bathroom covered in blood, she immediately ran to Blackie, who was walking across at the time, and she pretty much died in his arms because he would have been the last person that held her before she was put into the car. A guy called Andrew Lashley took her to the hospital in his van. And basically those were the last people that she would have come into contact with in life. But that is the nature of the man, you know. He was shattered by the incident. And I remember he spoke about it. He followed the case. He gave us information on what happened thereafter. And certainly a distinguished son of the soil. And I want to say to his family, his son, and his wife, you know, that your loved one will always be remembered by so many of us. Blackie touched not only the ones who made it to the Olympics, but he touched many of those who never got anywhere close to a track and field. And we remember him today. I talked about this girl, Donna, who did the stabbing, and she ended up at the Girls Industrial School. It's ironic because that's where I want to go next in terms of my conversation today. The Girls Industrial School has been in the news a lot recently. And I couldn't really speak about it as well last week because a lot of things happened. Or the last time I was on the air, a lot of things happened. I just wanted to remind you when this girl, Donna, went up to the Girls Industrial School until she knew the age of majority, that this is the type of individual that often finds himself at the Girls Industrial School. In my opinion, it is the institution is designed to deal with cases like that, where you have violent, in her case, mentally unstable young people who end up in institutions where they essentially need to protect it for themselves and protect it from society. The sad reality is that the majority of girls who are up there are not there because they're like Donna. They are there for this issue of wondering. No, I'm clear in my mind that this idea of wondering is absolute nonsense. I, however, think it is important that we understand a couple of things when it comes to this issue of wondering. Wondering is not only nonsense. No, wondering was nonsense for many years. But I found a newspaper article that was penned by Carol Martindale, and in which she quoted Barbara Cook, Aline, who would have been at the time the magistrate. And she was talking about the fact that the issue of wondering is a problem. She said in 2008, there were 55 girls charged with wondering in that period. Comparatively speaking, there were 24 charged with grief of bodily harm and 21 charged for burglary, but that's another matter. And she was saying that speaking during an interview with the Government Industrial Service, Cook Aline confirmed that wondering was very prevalent in Barbados, mainly among girls. She explained that wondering was a crime that only children between the ages of 11 and 15 could commit, and it involved essentially being somewhere without permission. She said that boys, the main reason for leaving home was usually gambling, cockfighting, and a small percentage were involved in sexual activity with older females or males. The magistrate added that children needed to know that they could be charged for leaving home without their parents' permission or knowing them knowing where they were going. She essentially made the point that, you know, a number of the girls, for example, the vast majority of the girls were charged with wondering because they had something to do with sex, or because they wanted to go to cavalcade or fete or something like that without the parents or guardians' permission, and they were wondering. This tells me something that I think that we have forgotten in all of this, that the persons who are the complainants in this wondering issue, in many instances, are the parents. And in many instances, the parents send those girls up there because they can't handle those girls at home. We create this idea in our head that wondering is about the police ripping children from their parents and taking them up to this penal institution, forgetting that the vast majority of girls who are up there for wondering are up there because their parents call the police and say, I cannot handle these children. You need to do something with them. So even if we get rid of wondering, and I'm assuming that we will get rid of wondering soon, a point has to be made that we need to have a facility and a way of handling the problem that is created when children decide, I prefer to go and sleep with my boyfriend who is overage when I am underage than stay in my house with my parents as I am told to do. I prefer to go on the street and pick fares, as is often the case, as opposed to staying at home when the night comes. And my parents are trying to protect me from that, and as a result, I am charged with wondering. That is a reality that we have to deal with. And as much as I am concerned about the fact that we still have this wondering nonsense on the statute books, the reality is that there is a problem, and it is a problem which I guarantee is going to get worse in this COVID environment, where more young people are finding themselves without the necessary resources to get by. Prostitution, sleeping around, all of this type of thing is going to increase. And as a result, you're going to have more children dealing with that. I had a conversation with a girl who was not anywhere near the government industrial school. And I also had a conversation with a girl who went to the government industrial school. I'll tell you about the GIS girl first. She indicated that her problem when she was probably 14, 15 years old was the fact that she found school boring. She was not interested in anything that was going on at school, but she had a boyfriend who was older and she enjoyed having sex with her boyfriend. Her mother did not think it was appropriate. She preferred to do it when the days came as opposed to going to school. And I'm being frank, this is what the young lady told me. She said, "Peter, I ended up at the government industrial school because I was told that either this boy is raping me because I am underage and a statutory rape, or alternatively, I will go up there and I will be penalized for wandering because I am leaving home without my parents' permission to go and see this boy." She decided to take the path of least resistance and she went to the government industrial school. And she said that her experience up there was largely positive. She came out with O-levels. The reality is that she did not have a choice to leave and go and do what she was doing otherwise. So she ended up focusing on something. They found something for her to do, and her experience was largely positive. We need to talk about that. The other side of it is the issue of this brutality that the girl experienced. And many years ago, I had a friend who was a victim of domestic violence. And she said to me, "All of you are concerned because you all see the visible signs, the bruises, the cuts associated with domestic violence." And I remember that very well because she almost brought tears to my eyes. She said, "What you all don't understand is that the more painful, the more brutal, and the more challenging experience for me was the emotional abuse through which I was put." And that is where I want to come to today. Marsha Hines Lane shocked Barbados by a revelation that she made, which was akin to a visible impact of domestic violence. But we are forgetting that there's emotional abuse that was brought to bear on those girls and the boys for years and years, which Faith Marshall Harris was talking about. And they sat on panels with Faith Marshall Harris. Nothing that she said when she was on the radio last week, Faith has not said before. And they sat in panels and we had conversations about the reality of the challenge that women and girls and young boys face in penal institutions in Barbados. And the one thing that she spoke about, which I didn't hear anything about so far, was beating. Because it is still legally possible to beat girls and beat boys in penal institutions, Barbados. It's perfectly legal to do it in schools, to do it in things. And UNICEF and Saint Faith Marshall Harris and me have been calling for the banning of beating in schools. But yet still, we can't hear anything about it. I see a lady nearly, she beat a daughter with a plank. And it was in the newspaper. It was on social media. The child get charged for wandering up to now. I have not heard anything about the parent being charged for brutality because a parent is allowed to beat the child. This is the kind of emotional abuse that I think that we need to be concerned about and stop playing that we are outraged because somebody has published a picture of something that happened. There are other things that we need to be outraged about as well, where our children are concerned, and we need to take efforts to ensure that the children do not get to that stage, you know, at a later point. And the other quick thing I want to mention is this whole issue of the photographing of the girl in the institution as a way of bringing this issue out into the open. In 2012, a journalist in Trinidad photographed a woman being raped, a minor being raped. He photographed a minor being raped, and he used to run a program on television in which he would bring these things into the public domain. And that was one of the things he brought into the public domain. He was charged. He was charged with some kind of charge. I'm not sure the name of the charge, but he was charged with four different charges. This is a television talk show host that many of you know, because you see him, he's always on the internet. He wears his big white glasses, right? And he was charged for doing that. His argument is that he was trying to bring this matter to public attention. Here in Barbados, years ago, the editor, the sub-editor, and two of the others at the Nation newspaper were charged with pornography because they published a picture of the young girl having sex in the classroom. And their position was, we are bringing this to the public attention so that the public will understand what is going on. But nonetheless, they were charged with an offense for doing it. Of course, nothing has happened to that charge. But the point I am trying to make is that the concern that the minister raised is nothing surprising. Because generally speaking, when you get involved in photographing, whether it be still or motion, a child underage, invariably you are charged in some way, right? I really do wish Marsha Hines well. I think that Marsha Hines means well. She's not the person who took the picture incidentally, but I know that she has been dismissed from the board along with the whole board. I do believe that she meant well. I have said to Marsha, and I say publicly, that as much as Marsha means well, Marsha lights too many fires, you know? I do feel that this could have been brought to the attention of the authorities in a way without being as explosive as it was. And truth be told, my understanding is that it was brought to the attention of the minister, and the minister did take action immediately to ensure that the young lady was released from her confinement at that point in time. So action was taken. The last thing I want to talk about is this whole question of the board. I can't say that I'm thrilled. I think that the idea of changing the board was reasonable. The composition of it, certainly the leadership of the board, I do have my reservations. I think if you listen to Brass Tacks many years ago, you would know that I had an epic clash with Reverend Baird on this program. I don't know what her competencies are in relation to this type of thing. So I wait to be persuaded that, you know, I was wrong and that she was the right person for the job. But I do have my reservations about the extent to which she would bring her bias in the church and Christianity to bear on what is a social problem that has nothing to do with religion. And that's my basic challenge in that regard. So let's see how it goes. So that's me for now, 434-1790. You can call, and I do hope that there are lots of you out there. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we start this morning's program. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. I'm just going to read one quick WhatsApp message where someone is saying, how else could Marsha have gotten attention if the issue wasn't outed? If she took it to the minister, it would have been hushed up or given a gag order. She did the right thing. Bring it into the public for, even at the expense of her being fired. Newsflash, the first person whose attention Marsha brought it to was actually that of the minister. So just so you know, by the time the matter got to the Nation newspaper, the girl had already been ordered out of confinement by the same minister. And this is a part of the story that needs to be told. So this suggestion that if she did not take it to the Nation, the minister would have done nothing is absolute nonsense. The reality is that the minister was aware of the matter before the matter made it into the public domain. And I'm sure that if Marsha calls today, she will also agree that that is the case. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning. Good morning, and welcome.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning. How you doing?
Hey, cool. I want you to give me some the time that you give your Reverend Carter's thoughts, my name is Mr. Agriculture. I don't normally ask for extended time. Hello?
Yes, go right ahead, sir.
Yeah. Would you agree with me that people go into stores and take out the stuff and then the postman bring the bills to custody postman for bringing bills? Now, why you say that? I don't create the problems that I talk about. I only talk about them and you only highlight them, so I don't know everybody at my throat and at the regular caller's throat. We respond to what people does. The postman has a job to do, and he has done it, kept on doing it, and I will keep on doing what God put me on this earth to do. And they don't care who the guy is. And you're wrong. I find that people get brutalized just for saying the right things. I'm not always right, but I'm always the first that I admit that I'm wrong. Hold on. I want to talk about if this government is so interested in doing so much good for people. How come then that all the rich people that owe government the millions upon millions of dollars in debt and taxes, whatever, those taxes were written off and new taxes were invented to put on the poor and already suffering people? And it don't mean the same. You taking a knife, you give me a shirt, and then take a knife and cut it up, and then asking me for the new and trade to repair the shirt. Why tear it up in the first place? I have a solution I think minimum wage is such a problem. I have a possible solution. Those taxes, those sewage taxes are so put on people for the bill. Remove them. You know, it's $40. And paying for, whether you're hooked to the system or not, paying for something that you did not do, then kind of things can't be right. Even if they don't want to get rid of that, reduce it. That alone will assist people in the hardship that they're going through. Every dollar counts, every account, it counts to
morning.
Every accounts to rich people. Shut back the door, please. Every accounts to rich people. It also accounts to the poor. No price control. I've been hearing that it can't work. Not kind of foolish. No, it can't work. They don't want it to work. I remember as a little child going to school at Robert School. A certain business place, I'm going to call the name, not the location, was made to pay $5,000 to the law court for picking 5 cents on salt fish. Albert was the either the premier or the prime minister then. Bradford Kett was minister of trade. How come it worked then, but it can't work now? People are these days, people who call themselves merchants and all that, are allowed to murder poor people. And they've been getting rid of it. But I guess is that you scratch my back, I scratch yours. And I don't agree with that.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Mr. P. I want to thank you for your contribution. I'm conscious that I have on the line Kathy Harper Hall, who wants to pay tribute to Mr. Frank Blackman. So I'm hoping to hear from her shortly. She's one of the calls on the line. So good afternoon. Good morning. Sorry, and welcome to the next caller. Good morning and welcome. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go right ahead, please. Go right ahead, sir. I'm hearing you.
Yes, sir. I'm not a regular caller to this program, but this call merits it. I live in Seaview, St. James, Lower Seaview, St. James. And for the past couple of months, we've been having some serious water problems. There are about 25, 30 houses in this particular area, Lower Seaview. I've called the water authority on many, many occasions. They said they check it out. But whatever they do, a problem gets worse. You have to get up 12:30 in the morning at 1 o'clock to get water for 10, 15 minutes. During the day, there's no water. All know there's no water. And all they keep telling you, they are looking at it and they're checking it. You don't feel good when you have electricity in the house. It is a bad situation. And they tell you one thing continuously. And it got me real upset. Oh, no. I'm relatively upset. All like today, I just spoke to them about it. They said they sent people and they're going to send somebody again. And it's a continuous process. But yet still, the problem still remains the same. It still remains the same. Lower Seaview, they about all the houses at the conference, St. Thomas Church, lower down, all the houses are practically on the right. The other side, you can't build. If you come over Lassenstall, all the houses are on the... No, if you come in St. Thomas Church, all the houses are on the left coming down. If you come Lassenstall, all the houses are on the right coming up. Just over Lassenstall. And that is where the problem occurs constantly. It's a regular thing. It's like, no, I've been trying to get through the bastards because it's my first time to let them know how I feel and what I think about the situation. And this is happening from last year. It has nothing to do with the work being done down whole town in that area across there. They must get something done. If something should be done. It must be done. You can't get it morning, noon, and night, and you turn your tap and there's no water. But yet still, you have to pay your water bill. And we do pay our water bill.
Because do you ever get tankers in your area, sir?
I didn't hear you.
Do you ever get tankers in your area?
If I ever get
Tankers, water tankers. Do water tankers come to your area?
Yes, water comes through. The tank comes through occasionally. But despite that, you know.
Fair enough. Sir, have you had any conversation with your parliamentary representative about the situation?
I haven't spoken to him. I haven't seen him. We haven't spoken.
Who is your parliamentary representative?
That would be Simmons.
David Simmons?
This is
Kerry Simmons.
Yes, please.
Right. Can you give Kerry Simmons' office a call and raise the concern with them and see if there can be some, if not a resolution? No, because, I mean, calling brass tacks is one thing, but I think that is probably more effective if you speak to your parliamentary representative.
Yeah, right? I agree, I'm trying to get some
understanding about why the problem is being caused and also a timeline for the resolution of the problem. I suspect that if you do that, you will probably find that you will get a more clear idea about the nature of the problem and when the problem will be resolved.
I would hope so. I will do what you say, sir. Thanks a lot.
Okay. All right. Okay, sir. Goody. And I am hoping that next time I hear from you, that the situation will be under control. Because this is certainly the rainy season. There's no reason now for saying that we have low water pressures. Down to brass stocks. Good morning.